Today's show brought to you in part by our friends at Sam Houston Race Park. We are promoting this upcoming Texas Champions Day in March and the next big contest in April, that first weekend of April, with all the Derby prep. Saturday, April 6th, $2,000 live bankroll contest. There's feeders and qualifiers going on at horsetourneys.com. The prizes are all added, 1 BCBCC, 2 NHC seats, and 2024 NHC Tour points. Going to be races from Sam Houston, plus all simulcast races run during the Sam Houston card from Aqueduct, Keeneland, Oaklawn, and Santa Anita. That means you're going to have the Wood, the Bluegrass, and the Santa Anita Derby in there. Be sure to get your seat now, as entries are actually limited for this contest to 100 in total. So act now. And for more information, be sure to check out InTheMoneyPodcast.com/SHRP. Hello and welcome to the In the Money Players Podcast. This is our show for Tuesday, March 5th. I'm your host, Peter Thomas Fornital, back with you in the Brooklyn Bunker once again. Though not for long, the travels are beginning in earnest, folks. This weekend, heading over to England, going to do Cheltenham, going to hang around because Perrin has a couple of weeks off school. Susan and Perrin are going to come over. I'll be working the whole time, but we're going to have some fun doing some theater things and then basically come back and boom, it's Keeneland. So the travels begin. So happy to be in the bunker while I can. Happy to be speaking here with you about a loaded weekend of racing action, and happy to be doing it with a man who you know from his work behind the microphone at Sam Houston, and also the fantastic work he does over at InTheMoneyPodcast.com covering the New York circuit. He's Nick Tamaro. Nick, how are things?
I'm doing great, Pete, and you can imagine I did the world's largest air quotes as I heard you say working the whole time you're going to be at Cheltenham and going around around England, old chap. You're going to be That's working, fair. Right? Yeah. A man who knows how to strike a work-life balance like few others I've ever encountered, but is very much willing to work. Don't get me wrong. You're a hard worker, but I've always enjoyed your ability to mix in a little social with the work.
Exactly. And sometimes, I mean, you know, for part of the business here, some of that's like very legit. What's great about this trip is just the way it dovetails with Perrin's 2-week school vacation coming right after Cheltenham, being able to piggyback that on. And you know, the thing about traveling, I love traveling, but the thing about traveling that gets, you know, onerous is being away from family. So when the two can be combined, and this year the schedule's perfect, we basically have a similar situation when it comes to Ascot this year, where Perrin's school ends and Ascot begins. So for the first time, Perrin and Susan will be able to come with me to that. It's a good year. It's a good year for my travel for sure. And that that enables other things like getting down to Lexington a few days early ahead of Keeneland to see some clients. And I think we're going to do a travel video. Our friends Josh and Mike, the guys who've done those perfect trip videos for us over on YouTube, we're going to tackle Lexington this season. So that's going to be fun. There's a lot of cool stuff cooking, no doubt about it. And this is a time of year where, you know, we've been talking about the Derby trail heating up. This was a funny weekend in that, in theory, we were going to get all these major clues, and then we end up with a weekend that was as notable, more notable, I would say, for who did not show up than who did. And not to be a negative Nelly about it, Debbie Downer situation, but I think we have to start there. What the hell was going on this weekend? Just bad luck, or was there something more to it?
No, this was really weird, right? I mean, this was like nothing we'd ever seen before. I mean, we woke up Saturday morning and found out that Victory Avenue was going to come out. We found out minutes later that Locked was going to come out. And, you know, we also found out at some point on Saturday that Nisos was going to be scratched from the San Felipe. And then, I mean, I think the one that still catches everybody by surprise, the Speakeasy, ends up running off in the post parade, drops Irad, and he gets scratched. So, yeah, it went from being like one of the more heavily anticipated runnings of the Fountain of Youth in years to suddenly being a glorified allowance race. Yeah. And the winner obliged all of us by performing like a glorified allowance horse. So, you know, it all sort of worked out. But, yeah, that was crazy. I mean, you know, so I guess taking them one by one, with Victory Avenue, obviously, you and I mutually have more of a of a line on the connections of that, and understand that with Victory Avenue, I mean, they were always sort of pushing the issue by moving him along quickly. You know, those are guys that had the benefit of winning the Kentucky Derby last year. So if Victory Avenue ultimately doesn't get them back, it's not really that big a deal. They wanted to give him the opportunity to prove that he was capable of doing it, and that was why he was in there. The fact that he ended up not looking exactly right Saturday morning and they now have to reroute, in all likelihood, if Victory Avenue is deserving, he's going to be on the trail down the line anyway. It might not be the Derby Trail. It might be the Traverse Trail. It might be the Belmont, but you know, that could end up actually helping him in the long run. The problematic horses in this whole scenario, and then I guess taking Nisos for a second, Baffert apparently never really was all that serious about running him there. I'm not sure how much everybody else knew that, but he's going to make the Santa Anita Derby or whatever his final prep for the Preakness will be without issue. The problematic horses are Locked and Speakeasy, because now with both of them, you're really up against it in terms of what pathway gets them to Kentucky. And with Speakeasy, you basically are looking at either Tampa plus one. But with Locked, you know, it wasn't something that was as simple as, oh, he ran off in the post parade. He could probably run as soon as next week. You know, with Locked, it was like, okay, well, now you've missed two races. Apparently, you were training really well between starts as well. And I didn't exactly see a heartwarming message about why he missed Saturday's race. So it's beginning to look like a bit of a long shot that Locked makes the Kentucky Derby. I cannot imagine they're going to press on with him to try and get there with one prep. So yeah, this was a disappointing turn of events, I think, from that perspective. It was obviously a very difficult day for Todd Pletcher's barn, because he wanted to run two of his stable stars and ended up running zero.
Yeah, very rough stuff. What? There's no historical precedent, or is there historical precedent for a one prep Derby run? I can't. Arazi, maybe.
I mean, Patrick Biancone did it with Patrick Biancone did it with a horse during the synthetic era when he had just come back to training, and I mean, the horse ran nowhere. It has happened very, very, very seldom, and Todd just doesn't feel like the kind of guy who would do it. And I mean, honestly, Pete, and look, you and I love the Derby. The Derby's great, but if you're in this scenario with this horse, it's time to regroup and look at something that you can take on maybe in early April, late March, and look at the Peter Pan, and then look at the Belmont, right? You're supposed to try and back it up now. And, you know, this horse already has a grade one. There are a lot of meaningful races out there. I think that, you know, nothing compares to the aura, of course, of winning the Kentucky Derby. But I mean, right now, breeders are just as concerned with a horse winning a race like the Traverse. So you're supposed to go with the long play at this point. And, you know, there's a lot to be said about there's a reason why a lot of the Eclipse Award winners over the years are horses that really dominated the second half of the year, because so much is put into getting to the Derby. And so many of these horses are just so run down by early May that you're actually much better off making it a long play and looking at something that really gets you to a big race later in the year.
I get it. We've seen that in recent years. And, you know, I think to a horse like Arrogate, and, you know, what would happen if they tried to rush him to the Derby, or a lot of these horses that, yeah, sometimes you're better off just, you know, don't force it. Listen to the vibes, read the tea leaves, whatever it is. It feels like that's where we are with Locke. And that's why I agree, even though he was Eric DeCoster's number one on our Kentucky Derby top 10 heading in, that he actually doesn't even have him on the list right now. I mean, he's a notable horse. He's right on the edge. He's certainly a horse you wouldn't argue with somebody if they still wanted to maybe sneak into a top 10. But I agree with the idea of taking him out and Speakeasy. Have you heard that they might think about trying to come back in Tampa? I'm not seeing him listed amongst the probables yet, but I mean, this is just a maiden winner. He's going to have to go, and go soon, if they want to keep that Derby dream alive. Or do you think they've accepted, I don't want to say defeat, but accepted, you know, plan B for him as well at this point?
Yeah, I've not seen them say anything about him being rerouted. I mean, knowing Pletcher a little bit, you'd imagine that he was probably going to take the conservative route of seeing what condition he was in on Monday and making sure that whatever, you know, cut or thing that may have happened to him when he ran off didn't affect him too negatively. I mean, the best case scenario would have been that he maybe put him through a workout yesterday, but I don't believe he did. So yeah, I don't know. No, he didn't work. So I mean, I don't know. Maybe that would have been a little too perfect world, but yeah, I don't know. It's tough to figure that he's going to press on really with either of these two terribly much. So I think you're probably going to see Speakeasy surface in something a little softer in the next month or so, and maybe something similar with Locked.
We will keep our ear to the ground and report the news. We do have a new top 10 Derby video with some of the changes based on the events that we saw on Saturday. Folks can go check that out. Before we dive into the race, it's funny, but I don't think this is a host fail. Maybe it's a host fail waiting this long to talk about the Gotham. I don't think it's a host fail to wait this long to talk about the Fountain of Youth the way it turned out. But there's a couple of things, a couple of threads I want to pick up on. And one is this NYSO situation. So, I mean, look, it is what it is, but I reading between the lines on this one, it did seem like Baffert was never particularly serious about running the horse in the race, and that, you know, maybe he used him as a way to discourage other participation to set it up for stablemates. Look, I don't know. People were still free to enter, and you're never supposed to be afraid of one horse. Do you have any problem with the way this went down, just as a racing fan or analyst or somebody who, you know, pays attention to the inner workings of the game? Or is it just sort of the way that it is?
I mean, the problem is that, and this conversation came up Saturday afternoon when it came out that he was going to be scratched, and there was some discussion of, oh, well, if people knew that, then there may have been more horses that entered. And what I would ask those people is, from where? Like, where are those horses? Because they ran Scatify. The other horse from that barn that is a three-year-old on the trail was Slider, and he got sent to New York, or he was going to get sent to New York and didn't end up going. So, like, my point being is, where are all of these three-year-olds that would have entered, right? I don't know where they'd be. And so, I mean, so I think there's two parts of the conversation. There's part of it in that, yeah, I mean, having entered 3 of 5, do I think that Baffert was probably trying to ensure that the race would go, knowing the whole time he was going to scratch NYSOs? I think there's probably a pretty good chance of that. Yeah. I think the racing office probably knew that as well. And whether they shared that with the other horsemen or not, that's a different issue. That's something that I really don't have the knowledge or the understanding to get into. I mean, I can understand if I was a horseman that went to the racing office and said, look, I'm thinking about running this recent maiden winner in the San Felipe. Is Baffert going to run all three horses? And they said yes, and then he didn't, I'd be pissed off. Right. But again, I'm not, so I don't know. But I mean, what I would say is that the best solution to that long term is just enter your horses no matter what. Right? Because NYSOs may have actually gotten hurt, or he may have actually run poorly, or, you know, something else may have happened. And the one way you'll never know how it would have shaken out is if your horse is in the barn. So, you know, enter and see what happens. There's no harm in that. So, yeah, I mean, what it set up was sort of it actually ended up being a pretty exciting race, but it set up a scenario where it just looked kind of foolish that one trainer had 3 of 5 horses, scratched one of them, and you're left with a 4-horse field.
There was some great racing at Santa Anita on Sunday, so I'm not trying to punch down here at all. I mean, and we'll get to as much of it as we have the time for. But it certainly was disappointing to see the great race like the San Felipe turn out that way. But I just don't know. I don't really like to complain and wring my hands when I don't have solutions, and I don't really have solutions for it. In the end, it was won by imagination with a rock solid 96 Byard speed figure. Wind me up also with a nice number right back there in second. They were the two horses that mattered in the race. It'll be interesting to see how Baffert decides to divide up these horses, if he's going to send a flotilla to the Preakness or if he's going to look to divide and conquer. There's some interesting things about the Belmont this year, the 1.25 mile Belmont at Saratoga, that could affect the plans for these Baffert horses and for Locked. Granted, the Pletcher never seems to shy away from an opportunity to run the 1.5 mile the way that other trainers do. But the fact that you have this 1.25 mile, this sexy 1.25 mile race to run 5 weeks after the Derby, you know, I wonder specifically what Baffert will do. It feels like Locked pointing there. Like, that just feels right to me. What do you think Baffert's going to do in terms of his whole bunch of horses now? Do you think we're looking at, you know, you might see 3 or 4 in the Preakness, or do you think it'll be more of a divide and conquer?
My inclination would be that it'll be more of a divide and conquer. The one question I had last week looking at the race too is, where is Muth? Like, I always assumed that. So I always assumed that Nisos was going to go Lewis Santa Anita Derby and Muth would be the San Felipe horse, but I guess he missed some training between, I don't know if that was weather related also, but yet he's not worked since the 25th, which would put him on schedule to have worked somewhere around like, I mean, today, the latest. So yeah, my thought was that you'd probably be looking at like, if he had four eligible horses, two would go to the Preakness, two would go to the Belmont. I would say that after Saturday, Imagination probably feels like more of a Belmont horse, whereas Nisos feels like a Preakness horse. Now, I don't think that Baffert would want to totally, you know, take the ball out of their hands, so to speak, and run Nisos in the Preakness, have him win, and then not give him the opportunity to come right back in the Belmont, because obviously being a dual Triple Crown race winner would be you know, it just adds to his value, obviously. So, yeah, I mean, to answer your question, I think he'd probably go like a, you know, he'd have one that was a Belmont horse, one that was a Preakness horse, and maybe a little bit of overlap. And, you know, he now has the luxury probably of using Wind Me Up as a horse that can pretty much run wherever. Because one thing about him is, I mean, he's not exceptionally talented. He's an above average horse without question, but he's one that fires every time. Yeah, and, you know, he seems to be easy. Yeah, he's a trier. He's a big time trier. And so, you know, he's also a horse with his running style, and he's going to make his presence known no matter where he lands.
Muth and Maymoon are both listed on the Blood Horse. No, not Blood Horse. The, what is it? The Horse Racing Nation tracker. They're both listed as possible for four different races. So it sounds like Baffert in his way these last few years, holding the cards very close to the vest. We'll see how it all plays
out. Well, I mean, and I'll ask you real quick. So like, what are those races? I mean, they've got to be the Arkansas Derby, the Bluegrass, the Wood, or the Santa Anita Derby, right?
Yep. And let me see. I'll actually look it up right now and see what the fifth one is for Muth. We've got Arkansas. We've got Florida. We've got Bluegrass.
Florida, right.
We've got Santa Anita. Yeah. And then, oh, Preakness would be he's already listed.
Right. See, I never even really consider the Florida Derby for Baffert horses just because he's so seldom sent horses to Gulfstream. I mean, it obviously wouldn't be unheard of. But, yeah, I mean, assuming that, you know, Muth might be the one that he's really holding as the Preakness horse. But, I mean, Maymoon is the same ownership. And Maymoon just beat Imagination, who came back and ran really well. So, I mean, yeah. One of those three is running in the Santa Anita Derby. I doubt they're running against each other. I can almost guarantee you somebody's going to Arkansas. Somebody's going to the Wood. So, yeah, I mean, they're going to truly divide and conquer.
It's a wild year. At this point, if there was the Kentucky Derby winner pays $20 plus prop, I think I would be very interested in it. It's really shaking out that way where we're not going to have, I mean, unless things change kind of radically, we're not going to have the fastest horses in their generation in the Kentucky Derby. That just feels like a recipe for a big long shot. And, you know, as evidence of that, Eric's current number one. Now, if I had been doing my rankings, I would not have made Dornock the number one horse. Eric did, and he had a logic behind it, which was basically he's buying the narrative that this was 80% fit Dornock. And let me just say this. It better be that's the case if he's a serious Kentucky Derby contender, because you nailed it in the open, Nick, when you described this as a glorified allowance race. It got a glorified allowance figure. Heck, you'd want to see a faster figure from a maiden. 88 came the number, but it wasn't just the figure, it was the way that it looked. I mean, this was a horse that had everything his own way and did not manage to look impressive. I'm sorry, I just gotta call it like I see it when it comes to Dornock's run in the Fountain of Youth. Now, I get it. Yeah, maybe he's going to be able to, he's got a, you know, at least a decent back race, and he's got the ability to come on from that. But I'm skeptical at this point. We'll see. I mean, I think it would be cool to have a horse with good graded form as a 2-year-old, really legitimize that number one spot with a big run in a race like the Florida Derby. But, you know, from where I sit, I can't get excited about it. Am I underrating Dornock at this point, or do you share my cynicism?
I totally share it. And I think that the whole 80% fit thing is the trainer's ultimate get out of jail free card, right? I mean, it's if he runs good, it's oh God, he was only 80% fit. And if he runs poorly, it's ah, don't worry, he was only 80% fit. And quite honestly, I mean, and I don't want to dump on him because I already made a comment about him last week, but I don't think Danny Garton's a good enough trainer to know what a horse at 80% fit is. Like, I mean, the record doesn't bear it out. I mean, he does not have the record of success with graded stake horses to actually know what that means. And so, you know, I'm not saying that he's not capable of figuring it out. I'm not saying that he's not capable of doing really well with a good horse. I think he's a horseman that's shown he can win at a relatively high percentage. He's just done that with a different type of horse. So it's he's had a hard time developing 2 into 3 year olds, making them move forward. And quite honestly, Pete, Doorknock looked like a horse that didn't move forward. You know, he looked like obviously a better version of Fierceness did in the Holy Bull, but Fierceness dramatically underperformed relative to what he was as a 2 year old. Doorknock underperformed relative to what he was as a 2 year old. Doorknock made it clear to us that he was an above average 2 year old. He's a talented horse. He ran very well in the Sapling. He ran very well in the Rems, and he was supposed to run a compelling race on Saturday. With the trip that he had, he was supposed to be able to get away from that horse that was coming up the inside. He was supposed to be able to post a mid-90s figure and make it clear that, hey, here I am at 3, better than I was at 2, ready to take a step forward. And he didn't check any of those boxes. And that's where the problem comes in. And I think, and I did see people, which is a fair argument as well, and I kind of alluded to this a little bit with you on Friday, and said, you know, everybody was ready to anoint Sierra Leone for running a 90 buyer in the Risen Star. But the difference was that Sierra Leone overcame some adversity. He was on a wet track, which was a well, wasn't a new thing for him, but he was on a wet track, wasn't necessarily the most conducive to off the pace horses, didn't really get the pace set up, overcame that adversity and ran a figure equally as fast as he had as a 2 year old. Doorknock, who ran a fast figure once with extremely favorable circumstances, didn't even match that figure with a very soft trip. Right. And so that's the problem, is that if you were to tell me ahead of time, Doorknock is going to be basically isolated on the lead. He's going to have a horse trying to rally to his inside. He's going to set a moderate pace. And I would have said, okay, he's going to draw off and win by 5. He's going to get a 96 fig, and we're going to say, here's the Derby favorite. And he just didn't do that.
I agree. Let's talk about the race in New York. Oh, one more point about Sierra Leone before we move on. Who's the horse that I probably would have put at number one? The other thing about that 90 is I think you can make a pretty good argument that if it's not low, just noting what a guess that figure is, given how that track seemed to be changing throughout the course of the day.
That figure is as close to useless as they come. And I don't, right. And I say it also because that was a final time that was heavily influenced by a slow pace.
Yes.
I mean, that is the ultimate, that's like a big Thoregraph and Timeform US performance, because those are figures that can more accurately capture what happened. And I'm not saying that buyers aren't accurate. I'm saying there are other ways to judge performances that might be more accurate in this scenario. And yeah, so to kind of steal your thunder there, that would be my take on it.
We'll see what, you know.
Whereas, you know, you take a horse like Timberlake, just touching on him very quickly, and Timberlake ran a 93 fig, which was a good thing to see because he at least matched his 2 year old form. And he did have a bit of a wide trip. He did beat a weak field, but, you know, at least with him, you felt like, okay, we know he's every bit as good as he was last year and probably has the potential to move forward. Because if you tack a 16th of a mile onto the Rebel, he probably wins by 4. Right? I mean, he was getting away from those horses again a little bit late. Maybe he's a little distance limited, but there was nothing about that performance that made you say, ugh, you know, he wasn't even as good as he was last year. That was the Doorknock reaction to me. He did not look as good as he did last year. And at this point, he's too short a price. The expectations are too high for him to be missing any of these opportunities.
It is interesting noting the betting, the market sees it like we do. I mean, Sierra Leone, who I do like, but too short for me to be excited about at the current 7-1. Doorknock just really basically, I think, held price from that, which I guess makes sense given the level of competition, the fact that he was, you know, all out to win at 1-5, 16-1, the number being hung on Doorknock. Let's talk about the biggest market mover from the weekend and the performance for a 3-year-old that I think, no offense to the Baffert horses out west on Sunday, but all in all, I was the most impressed with Deterministic. Made his return to the race as a winning one. And this was a race that the figure came back in an okay 93, but I really just liked the way he did it. I liked the way he finished up. Going in, you know, there was this concern. Stephen Crest had mentioned on the show we did on Friday that apparently, and I didn't see this reported, but if Steve saw it, that's good enough for me, that they were really, this wasn't some huge confident move of running deterministic in the Gotham as much as it was that there wasn't an allowance race and he clearly needed a race because he thought he could be good enough for the Derby. So when that's a little bit of a narrative that I'll take as a positive here in that, you know, it suggests that I mean, everything about the horse suggests that there's more to come, as did the debut run at Saratoga. Now, is deterministic, who I really like, is he for you more of a flavor of the week, Nick, or is he a serious Kentucky Derby contender at this point?
He's somewhere in between, but trending more towards serious Kentucky Derby contender, because what we don't know about him and what we need to see is two turns. So, you know, this is, and I mean, look, long term, we can touch on this very, very briefly, but, you know, we all got a look at what the renderings are going to be like at Belmont moving forward from 2026. We're going to be dealing with a lot of horses that have not gone two turns going into the Kentucky Derby when the Wood Memorial is run around one turn. Yeah. And so, I mean, that's going to be a big, big time factor in how we judge these horses. And I think it's more so because deterministic does kind of have a little bit of a profile of maybe being a one run, one turn horse. He's bred a little bit more towards that, the dam side. His dam was a horse named Julio's Jewel, who broke her maiden on the turf and won a couple of turf sprints. Liam's Map doesn't exactly inspire the most confidence in terms of how long a horse is going to go. So this may have been exactly what is the perfect fit for him. But he's very intriguing because he's two for two. He's overcome some level of adversity both times. He had a tough trip in his debut, and he beat what looked like a good field. And then he came back and won on an absolute quagmire. I mean, it looked like a hurricane was coming through Aqueduct most of the day. And I saw Brad Cox in the paddock saddling just a touch. And I thought, he probably thought to himself, boy, I could be in New Orleans right now where it's 75, or Hot Springs where it's 70, and I'm here saddling this horse. He was on the duck for the day, right? He lost with multiple favorites. And so, yeah, just nothing went right. But yeah, that's just not what he was expecting, not what I was expecting. So anyway, it was a good performance. It was a very solid effort. We're going to see what he does in his next start. So I would say you have to be intrigued by him.
No. Jury's certainly out, but I mean, my biggest thing about the distance is just how he shapes like a horse for whom more distance is going to be a good thing. Though, you know, there's other things that factor into the one turn, two turn thing as well. You know, I've said many times, I'm a believer that it actually requires more stamina to do that. But there's a certain type of runner, you know, running around two turns requires a handiness that deterministic may or may not possess. We don't really know at this point. I'm optimistic though, and I'm happy to have him now as a top four contender over there. We'll send folks to that YouTube channel. Check out the video. It's actually performing really well. And we have a little comment contest going on too. If you drop in the YouTube comments who you think who should be the current number one on the Derby top 10 and give us a little reason why, we'll feature you on the next video we're going to do, which is going to be for the Tampa Bay Derby. We'll probably end up recording that on Thursday. We don't have time to talk about all of these stakes that we saw over the weekend, because boy, there were so many of them. So why don't we just pick and choose, Nick? We'll start with Saturday and the racing at Gulfstream. Was there a particular horse that that impressed you that you think is worthy of a call out on the show that raced down in South Florida?
I mean, I think the race that was the other disappointment, and in terms of not seeing horses that we wanted to see, was not getting to see Just FYI in the Devona Dale. That was a race that was eventually won by Fiona's Magic. And Fiona's Magic is trained by Michael Yates, who we saw get onto this trail last year with the filly that Jake ended up buying, whose name I can't remember. She had kind of a funny name. Darth Vader. Yeah. So we saw him. I actually thought the Devona Dale actually came up a pretty good race. And Into Champagne, who finished second from Ian Wilkes's barn, is nice. And Todd Pletcher was beaten at 1-5 with Leslie's Rose. So I did want to mention Fiona's Magic, who seems pretty gritty. Doesn't really seem like an Oaks horse. Probably wants to go a little bit shorter when push comes to shove. You know, the majority of the races otherwise were run in divisions that kind of, you know, they certainly don't matter for the Derby trail. But they also, and this is with all due respect to our friends down at Gulfstream, but a lot of these early season handicap division races and early season 3-year-old turf races, they don't really matter when racing shifts north. A lot of these horses don't really perform at the same level. I thought Chili Flag looked good in the Honey Fox. I would imagine Chad will point her to a race like the Maker's Mark or the Jenny Wiley, and she seems to be getting better now as a 5-year-old. She was pretty game in beating Walkathon. Irad seems to have the timing right so often on that turf course. And R. Kelly Kim won the long distance turf race for fillies, and that of course gave Brendan Walsh the win for Rich Averill and Jason Wirth. I did not realize Jason Wirth is responsible for 2-8 racing, and he had Max Scherzer at the track, which Peter Aiello took a bunch of pictures with them. You can see that he was fanboying. I will mention the thing that I did want to go out of my way to say is that you made an excellent selection of Starting Over, and Pounce actually were two horses in a row that you brought up at big prices that won the Here Comes the Bride and the McDermida respectively. On our plus show. So those were very good picks. I don't expect either of them to win anytime soon ever again, because you got on them on the right day. And but hey, you got on them on the right day, right? That's what matters.
Starting Over actually ran a big figure on the buyer scale. I was surprised to see that come back as fast as a 99. I did think that might be a right place, right time. But given the hands he's in, I certainly wouldn't rule it out. Pounce, I do think, you know, that one for me, the case made was, are we going to get a clever enough ride from Castellano? And boy, we got the cleverest of all, a horse who was first the last day, taken back to last, and just had an absolutely perfect setup and needed every inch of the stretch to get up. But hey, we'll take it. It's nice when it works out. One other horse I wanted to mention from Gulfstream, Emmanuel, got a 97 buyer in the Canadian turf. I think you've already answered this question that you're not necessarily sure if that is turf form that's going to travel north as we get down to the nitty gritty of the turf season. But, you know, on figures for an American turf horse, certainly seems like one that is at least going to take some money wherever he shows up next.
Yeah, he'll go next to the Maker's Mark Mile, I'm sure. And this is a horse that won the poker last year, so he, you know, he hinted at having some real ability. I learned yesterday from the X app that he will meet Master of the Seas, Breeders' Cup Mile winner, in the Maker's Mark Mile as Charlie Appleby continues his assault on American racing. So that'll be a tough objective for Emmanuel, who will need to undoubtedly take his game forward a bit. And he struggled in that race last year, but, you know, is clearly a horse that when he's on his game, he's as good as anybody out there that we have going along on the turf.
Yeah, he's a useful horse. Plus, I do think it's likely that he'll find, you know, when he pops up in that grade one, somebody to give him a hassle. He's yet to be properly proved at that level. We'll see if this step up is enough. The 97 buyer encouraging. Is that race is that the first weekend of Keeneland, the Maker's Mark?
No, that's the second. That's the Friday of the second weekend.
Gotcha. When the contest would be. I typically alternate between opening weekend and the contest weekend. This weekend, the way the schedule goes, I'm going to be out there for the first weekend, as we'll be filming that fun lifestyle video. Should be a good time. Let's talk, while we just have a couple more minutes here, we're going to have to give this short shrift to some degree, but let's look at the card from Santa Anita, the rescheduled card on Sunday. We already talked about the 3-year-old race. Let's talk about the grade ones. Newgate getting the job done in the Santa Anita handicap with a solid 99 buyer speed figure in there. This was a horse that there was a lot of positive chatter about beforehand, and we got to see a flying dismount on Big Cap Day. That was kind of cool. And the horse was actually, it was a funny race where you had four horses basically bet the same, and Chappie and Duke made good cases for Newgate on the show that we did on YouTube, and he was able to oblige. Any particular takeaways from this one?
Yeah, you know, I think one of the coolest things that's happened in racing that really doesn't involve a horse in the last 2 years is Frankie Dettori being a regular at Santa Anita and seeing him at his age still perform at the level that he has. And, you know, I've been a big fan of Frankie's obviously forever. And he and I share the same birthday, not the same year, but the same birthday, which I told him when I met him in the elevator at Keeneland last year. And he was very heartened to hear it. And I used the 8 words in Italian that I know, which he was, I'm sure, was very impressed by. And I bet he tells his friends about that experience as much as I do. So, but no, with that said, he said something important afterwards. And I felt like a little nostalgic about all of this as everybody dumped on the Big Cap. And you know, the Santa Anita handicap, even at $400,000, even wedged between a $20 million and a $12 million race, and even though it's just getting mainly regional participation, you know, races like that have to matter, right? I mean, the big cap is a race that has to matter. And I hope, and I don't want to be hoping in vain, but I hope that whatever can happen over the next few years to maybe develop some type of series of races or something that might get some attention back on a race like that to make it really matter again, boy, I wish it could happen, because, you know, the big cap is a big deal. And it's a race with an illustrious history of winners. And yeah, it went through a bit of a dark period with some synthetic runnings and some winners that you probably wouldn't really worry too much about. But, you know, it's just a race that's supposed to mean something. And it clearly did mean something to Frankie to win it, saying what he did afterwards. And the Newgate was really game in doing so. It was a huge performance from Subsanador, who was second. Excellent tactics used there to send him to the lead. That was what I was kind of hoping they would do with Reincarnate, who is clearly just a figment of my imagination at this point, that whenever he's run well, excuse me, it's been totally by accident. But he actually didn't run that badly. He just doesn't want to go a mile and a quarter. He kind of stopped in the final furlong. But yeah, you know, it was good to see Newgate do it. DuJour won the Kilrow. I guess I'm pivoting for you, with a slick move up the inside. That race was a little bit more about kind of underwhelming performance by Goliad, who was on the lead, but never really looked all that comfortable on the lead and didn't break with the same kind of pop that he had in his last few starts. And once that happened, that really was down to a two-horse race between DuJour and Easter, and DuJour was a little bit better. Easter's a horse that probably wants a little bit more than a mile when push comes to shove. Feels like a race that probably is just, you know, a regional type of grade one. These Southern California turf horses generally don't go elsewhere and make much of an impact. And, you know, DuJour's kind of proven that too.
DuJour did get a 103 on the Bayer speed figure scale. Is he the best turf horse Baffert's ever had?
I mean, Tuzlo is probably somewhere in Kentucky, or actually she could be dead by now. I should probably know that before I say it. But Tuzlo was a very nice turf horse that Bob Baffert had. He is probably better than her. I mean, I'm really reaching into the annals of history here, but Tuzlo was a French mare that Bob McNair owned, and she won the Ramona. She won the San Francisco Mile against males. She won the Buena Vista. There were not nearly as many grade ones at that point, and the problem was that she was running against a bunch of Bobby Frankel horses in grade ones out there. And then she ran a really good race in the Breeders' Cup Mile in 99, I want to say. She finished second to Silic. I'm actually going to look it up right now. She did. She finished second to Silic. She was beaten in neck. And I remember when Jonathan had Baffert on JK Plus One, it was during COVID, and he said something about, well, that's got to be the best turf horse you had. And Baffert said, no, I trained a horse in the 90s named Tuzla, who was really, really good. And I mean, this mile where she finished second, so Silic won it, she was second, Docksider was third, Hawksley Hill was fifth, Middlesex Drive was ninth, Jim and Tonic was eighth. These were all really, really good horses. So yeah, she probably was a little bit better, but DuJour is still really nice. And, you know, he's definitely in the right place at the right time.
Best one in a quarter of a century. Anyway, I've rarely been on the right side of DuJour, but I think you make a good point about Easter and the added ground being that one's friend. Ruby Nell got back to winning ways with a 90 by her speed figure. I think, you know, last time it was just all about that lack of break. This time broke with alacrity. Excellent job from Dettori aboard Mufi to get that second spot. Yeah, I mean, it was a good – there were some really good races, you know, for as much as people want to bash what happened in the San Felipe. Good competitive racing throughout that card. And if you listen to Chappie and Duke on our show, you ended up doing okay there. To bring it back, and maybe we'll close with this, bring it back to the big cap. Are you open to the idea? I think the right thing to do at this point is probably to, I guess you got two choices really, now that I'm making this up on the fly. But if you were to try to do some sort of older horse series, maybe you could make it a kickoff event for, you know, the race, the big money races in the Middle East by trying to do something on Santa opening day, or maybe you could make it the Key West Coast Prep, have it sort of replace the Goodwood in the fall. Do you think either of those things would be a good idea to raise the profile back up of the big cap, or is that messing with history too much for you?
I would absolutely put it on the 26th of December. I would make the purse 400,000. I would add 150,000 for every Breeders' Cup Classic starter. I would add 150,000 for every Breeders' Cup Classic top four finisher and 75,000 for every other Breeders' Cup Classic starter, or give them a bonus specifically. And I would run it on the 26th of December. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's about the only thing left to really try and raise the profile. And, you know, unfortunately, and I hate saying it because I've just gone on and waxed poetic about how important it is as itself, but you basically are making it a Pegasus prep at that point. You're making it a West Coast Pegasus prep, and you're looking to try and raise the profile of it that way. So I think that's a day not only where Santa Anita is getting the undivided attention of the racing world, but you're getting horses to ship in anyway for the Malibu and La Brea. And so, you know, that's another thing that's hurt the situation too, Pete. And that's a little too in the weeds for most of our audience, but it's hard to ship around the country now, right? There aren't as many flight options. It's very difficult. So that undoubtedly has hurt the big cap as well. But yeah, move it to a date where it really garners a tremendous amount of attention. My understanding is they're taking the Goodwood and they're turning it into a California crown race, that just my spine tingles at the name of it, but whatever, you know, they're trying to innovate. They're trying to do something new. I'm all about innovation in racing. So they're going to try and create some type of event out of that in the fall, which is great. Like, let's see what could happen. But yeah, let's do something different with the big cap, because the big cap in its current form is just not going to work. So it's going to need a little bit of new life breathed into it.
I think there's something interesting about what you're saying, where it sits, because you get that double idea of potential Pegasus prep slash, you know, adding that incentive for horses coming from the Breeders' Cup. That might just work. And even a horse that was going to stud the next year could potentially still do that. And I'm pretty sure I'm right about this. Could still do that, you know, and Pegasus, and be able to be a stallion. I think they'd have time to do it in the same season. And just a little correction of myself, I'm the one throwing around the name Goodwood like it's 7 years ago. The Awesome Again, I
Awesome
think, is
Again.
what that race is called for a long time.
I still call the 2-year-old races Oakleaf and Norfolk. So, I mean, I don't know. With
I
all due
don't.
respect to American Pharoah and Chandelier.
Yes, I don't. I don't exactly know the politics and the story. Somebody will explain to us on another show when we have time what happened. It used to be the Oak Tree Meet. It was run by the Oak Tree Racing Association. I don't know why that went away and how it all changed, but when it did, I'm assuming that was the exact time when they renamed all those races.
Yes, I'm sure Rick Hammerly can give you the info on that. I know the Oak Tree Racing Association was essentially removed from the racing circuit, and the Stronach Group renamed all those races. So yeah, that's when we lost the ancient title and the Oakleaf, Norfolk, Goodwood, all of those.
Yeah, I don't understand. I'm sure there's a political story, and Rick probably is the right guy to ask. And hey, it's always fun to call him, and we haven't had him on these airwaves in a while, so maybe that's a future conversation. We've got a guest ready for us in the green room here, Nick, and I know you got to get on with your day, but appreciate you very much. We'll have you back very soon.
Sounds great, my friend. Anytime.
Today's show also brought to you by our friends from Kutt, Kutt. This is a new way to bet, social betting, and I absolutely love it. The cost is better than traditional betting sites, 3% commissions. That's a great deal. It's also really cool because you can bet on things that you can't bet on in other places. We got the Oscars coming up. You can do Oscar betting on there. There's all kinds of fun prop betting you can do as well. It's going to be a great way to play the NCAA tournament. You can challenge other users. Hey, challenge me. I'm Looms Boldly on there. I'd be happy to get involved for. I'm an action junkie. You make me a small money challenge bet, I'll be matching that for you on pretty much whatever it is, as long as it's the established market price. And you can also find other bets that are posted publicly, post your own bets publicly. You can't automatically get matched the way you can on a traditional betting site, but there's so many positives here that it's well worth it. And best of all, right now, you have a chance to get a deposit bonus, 10% deposit bonus, up to $1,000. So if you put $1,000 in, you'll get $1,100 free money, folks. ITM24, the promo code to use for that one. That promo code, once again, ITM24. Download the Kutt app and get started today. This is a great new way to play. Next up on the show, very happy to bring in a man I've been a fan of for a great number of years. I can recall when he was training horses for Buckram Oak Farm and the green and red colors that used to grace winter circles in New York and around the country. He'd been at it a minute since then. He's back in the USA. We're going to talk to him about his adventures in between as well. But he's back in the USA now as the racing manager for Sport of Kings Racing Partners. He is Mohammed Mubarak. Mohammed, how are things today?
Great, great. Thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
Let's talk about you first and establish you for the folks who remember and some of the new viewers as well. So what had you been up to in your stints between USA racing gigs?
I left when the boss passed away and we closed Buckram Oak in 2007. So I took a little break. I went back home, which I've never been there for many, many years. You know, took some time off. And I obviously have two boys that are growing up and they wanted to be with the horses. So we did a few years in England. You know, we did pretty good for the amount of horses we had over there with them. But it was more like a learning stepping stone for them to come to the USA. And they do okay. They train here down in Gulfstream. I keep an eye on them. They're doing okay.
I think you're underselling it when you talk about the little bit of success you had. I recall you having some success at some pretty high levels in England at various times. Tell me a little bit about your experience over there.
England is good racing, but it's very, very prestigious, you know. I was very blessed as a very young age there to take the horses for Buckram Oak Farm and start at the age of 21, actually. I landed with the first grade one winner was in, I was 23 years old, but many, many good horses. You know, you get the opportunity and, you know, you have, you get good team together, you can do good, you know. It was very, very nice times. I only did 4 years, 5 years, but it was very effective, you know.
Group one success is as high as it gets and not easy knocking heads with some of those characters over there as well. How did you find that as a young man, being able to compete toe-to-toe with some of these legendary trainers who were running horses in those same races?
To be honest with you, I can't remember. It was either very ignorant or... But it did feel different. It did feel different until one day something happened, actually, and it did. I had a very, very nice two-year-old, and he was running in the Royal Lodge at Ascot.
Sure.
And I went in there to get the saddle. You know how we go get the saddle to the trainers, pick up the saddle. And Sir Michael Stout was standing there, and he looked at me upside down, you know, from top to bottom. You know? He said, "You here?" I said, "Yes, and I'm here to stay." I don't know what happened. He said like this, but. And I ended up winning the race too.
Amazing. Amazing. Yeah.
No, but you know, but it becomes, you know, but once you take them down one time, you know, these big trainers, once you take them down, you will see a totally, totally different picture, you know, of what you're scrambling. You think you're scrambling down there, you're never going to do it and all that. And then you get your hands on the right horse and you nail it. You have a big heart then. You know that there is nothing special. It's the horse. It's all about the horse, you know?
I know you earned a lot of respect over there and over here. So you came to the States. You had success with Buckram Oak here as well. You went back overseas for a number of years. What did you miss most about racing in the United States when you were away?
It's very different here as well to Europe. Here is like the racing on the dirt is very, very unique. It's beautiful. Sure. The other stuff, you know, the turf and the pita and all that, you know, the racing on the dirt is very, very different. And how the horses get programmed into them big races and how the build up goes, you know, even your everyday allowance horses or claimers. You can't rush back and put them straight back in. This timing, where with the grass horse and tapita horse, you can more or less get away with a lot of that, you know? But with the dirt horse, it seems like to perfect it, there is timing. There's a lot more to it with a dirt horse. I feel, you know.
Do you think that's because it's a little bit more demanding physically, that just the nature of dirt racing, and how does that change the way you not just program them, but how you train them day to day? Do you have to do different things with a dirt horse than a turf horse to have them ready to compete?
A dirt horse, like, he's different, you know, because he handles the dirt. You know, his level of fitness, I think, becomes totally different, and his gap of fitness is very sensitive up there. You know, like, he can very easily get tired. You know what I mean? Like, he can very easily back up a little bit if you underdo him. You know, or if you overdo him, you can, it's very easy to. He's a fine line there.
Yeah.
Where with the grass horse, you know, it's a very open margin, I always think, you know. You know, he could do without the last workout. He could do with not so much the galloping. He could do without, because it's labor already going through the ground. It's hard work for him every day because he doesn't like so much the dirt, you know.
Right.
But
it
the
makes
dirt
sense.
But the dirt is a real, real finesse job. It's really not, I love it. I love it.
I want to talk to you, Muhammad, about the role that you have now, racing manager for Sport of Kings Racing Partners. How did you hook up with this team?
Maria, our PR and sales lady, got me hooked up with Michael Karras, who is our founder and president of Sport of Kings. And it's an honor. What a gentleman he is. And he's done the full setup for us in every, from A to Z, in order to go ahead and make it grow and get better with the better quality horses. But, you know, as you know, in order to get to these classic races and group races and all that, it all starts at the sales, you know, and at the sales, obviously, you need a good team, you know, to select the horses, but also you need a lot of money nowadays. You know, it's very, very hard to select nice top of your list, and then you end up, you can't afford it, you know? So what we're trying to do here is we're trying to put, you know, some money together. I give it to you from the end, as they say.
Yeah.
By getting clients, getting people, and also not to have too many horses in the same horse. Like this, we feel that they will feel part of the horse. You know, not 0.01 ownership or something crazy. You know, you'll be controlling traffic all the time, you know? Like this, they will feel good. They can go to the track. They can go to the barn. You know, they own one leg of a horse. But it's good. And we've come a long way in such a short time, you know?
You sit in a good spot between, you know, and there's nothing against fractional ownership. I'm not bad-mouthing the point. Oh, no. One idea that's for some people, but this gives you the ability to be involved on a much more full level while still able to diversify, be involved in multiple horses, increase your action, increase your chance of winning. And for a lot of our viewers and people who want to get involved with ownership, part of it is learning the game and making them better horse players and just enhancing their understanding. That's the sweet spot that you guys sit in. You mentioned teamwork. I want to talk a little bit more about the team approach that you guys have to training. Obviously, your background is as a trainer. How hands-on are you now with the different trainers that Sport of Kings Racing employs?
Very much hands-on. You know, like, again, you have to be very close with the trainers, you know, on a friendly level even, you know. In order, it's like a teacher, you're sending your horses to school,
right?
You're sending your children to school, and you want to make sure, like, they're sitting more or less front row, you know, listening and paying attention.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, in the days of Buck Ramoke, obviously, I worked with the very best trainers, like Billy Mott, Todd Pletcher, Rick Dutro, Nick Zito, Patrick Biancon, Carl Navzor. These are all I was managing horses that they had belonging to Buck Ramoke Farm. So I was able to pick up, you know, a lot of knowledge from them and learn, you know, as much as one can learn. and learn as much as we can. And you can only say so much, obviously, to a trainer. You know, he has to do his job, because if you don't have confidence in the trainer, you shouldn't give him awards, you
Correct.
know. But you're there, you know, you're like a sponge between the trainer and the owner, and try to keep things going smooth in the best possible way. And they all seem to like me, you know, they show they like me in the past, you know.
Tell us about some of the trainers on your team now.
Right now we got, because of the horses that we're using at the moment, we haven't gone out to the cream. We've got some top trainers, obviously. Rick Dutrow, he's been a good friend of mine and, you know, a trainer of ours. He's got a couple of nice horses belonging to us. Dale Romans, he's got three or four. Linda Rice has a couple. Dallas Stewart. You know, we've spreaded them around, you know, a little here, a little bit there, but hopefully as soon as, you know, we get involved in the sales to be able to approach to get some of the horses that we're really after, you know, good 2-year-olds or something like that, then it would raise the tempo better, you know.
Yes. Let's talk about your biggest success story so far. That's Coppola. I know if everything goes according to plan, we'll be in action again this upcoming weekend. Sport of Kings Racing Partners hasn't been around that long. You've already had some success at the stakes level, thanks to Coppola. Give me a little bit about the background of him and tell me how he's doing.
Coppola is an absolute gentleman of a horse. He's been the backbone of all the horses at the moment with us. He's been very, very progressive throughout last year. He's done very well. He's made like 350,000. We tried him at the stake level last time, and he won the nice stake over here, 150,000. With the pedigree he's got, and now that he's progressing at that age of 5, you know, as you know, sometimes they change big time, they move up. He's got another stake race on this weekend running in preparation to the Shackleford. This is a grade two race at Keeneland, over 5.5 furlong, that hopefully he will be very competitive in that one. This is the main thing. And if he proves himself in graded stakes, hopefully we can keep going for the rest of the year, and maybe we'll have a stallion on our hand, being by Into Mischief, you know, out of a Bernardini Mary's, you know, he could be something nice to deal with, you know.
I was going to ask about that. I mean, it's obviously not the usual progression to be a stallion to have this kind of success when you're older, but when you're dealing with those bloodlines, it absolutely gives you something you can dream on and think about, especially, you know, in this day and age where there's, you know, desire to get so much desire for that Into Mischief blood, and who knows if he continues on this trajectory, might give him a chance to keep that bloodline going. It's a fun idea to think about. And I think a testament to the idea, one thing that I really like about the Sport of Kings Racing Partners model is you guys are involved in the game at a whole lot of different levels. And some of the other appearances, we've talked about that. And it's interesting to see, you know, that it could extend potentially even to the breeding side of things. You mentioned about the sales, and there's a 2-year-old in training sale coming up. Is that part of your focus right now? Is that something you're going to be involved in?
For sure, for sure. We bought a couple of horses last year as yearlings, you know, as just a trial, starting with it, which I did before for many years for Buckram Oak, and it was a great success with the breeze ups. So we got we have one we're selling. It's by Volatile. We paid 100,000 for him. He's really doing very well. Hopefully he's going to breeze on the 6th and on the 9th. He got into the first day. He's my first year sire, Volatile. But we love him very, very much. He looks nice. Plus, you know, our main thing was to try to put some people together in order to go shopping and be able to purchase, you know, a little better horses, you know, a little more of a quality horse. And we're hoping that in the April sale, we will be in action. We've managed to put something together, but obviously, as we are starting now, and you know, we've just been working on it. You know, it's gonna take a little time, you know, to get where we need to get, you know. But obviously, we're looking at all this as like a 3-year project in order to have a nice 4 or 5 year olds in the stable, two or three 4 year olds, you know, state courses, 2 or 3 3 year olds. So if every year we can hold on to 1 or 2 or 3, you know, it all depends is obviously how much we can, how many horses we can get every time. And, you know, some make it, some don't make it, some are up to par, some are not up to par, you know? So this is the whole thing, you know, from year to year, it's just to hold on to something, you know?
Yep.
And hopefully down the road, we might have a Buckram Oak.
That's a great goal. And I was going to ask that. You talked about a 3-year plan, a 5-year plan. And yes, that is the idea, to ultimately be involved more on the breeding side and have partners who are involved in racing from every level. Maybe some that you're selling to help fund proceedings, some that are racing actively, some that you're looking to hold on to, maybe even for when their racing days are done. It's an ambitious project, but I know from everybody I've talked to on the team, including yourself, that you guys really seem up to the challenge. Where can folks learn? You know, people are looking to get involved in this operation, Muhammad. I'll show the website up on the screen, but give us in your own words the best way for people to learn more about the operation and to maybe get involved themselves.
It's pretty much straightforward. You know, we got about 22 horses that are racing at the moment. If they contact our PR and sales lady, Maria, she'll explain everything that needs to be explained of. You can pick whatever horse you want to get involved with, at what percentage you want to be involved with, and she'll explain. She's fantastic with that. You know, she'll explain what's going on. These are all like what we call bread and butter horses and fun horses, you know, everyday horses. But, you know, slowly, slowly, like I say, we're trying to elevate the whole game, you know, and get involved in the sales part of it. And hopefully by come April, we could be involved. You know, we have put together for April, but obviously, you know, the more the merrier, the which speeds up the whole process, which puts you more involved, more quicker, you know?
Yeah, I get it. SOKRacing.com. That's the website. That's the best way to get in touch with Maria to learn more about the operation. As Muhammad indicated, as the year goes on, the different offerings are coming up. It's worth paying attention. And even if you've looked before, go back and look now and see what some of the offerings are. Again, an ambitious plan. They've had success already. A team that I believe in. You know, I've known Maria for almost as long as I've been a fan of Muhammad. Somebody with real industry knowledge and experience, and most important of all, somebody who knows how to have a pretty good time at the racetrack. So, very much looking forward, Muhammad, to everything you guys have coming up. Any other messages you want out there for the viewers before we send this segment home?
No, we look forward to meeting some nice people that love to be involved with the horse world, which is a totally different world. You know, it's nice. You get to go to different places, meet great people. You know, it's racing is very special in itself. You know,
website once again, SOKRacing.com. You can learn more there. You're going to be hearing more on these airwaves, including a visit soon from Michael Karras, who Muhammad mentioned. He'll be on handicapping some races with us at the end of this week, giving us one final update on Coppola before he makes his return to the races. Muhammad, thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciated having you on. We'll be back right after this. That's going to do it for this edition of the show. Would like to thank Muhammad and Nick for joining me. Thank our sponsors, Sam Houston, Race Park, and Cut as well. Let's thank our founding partners over at 10 Strike Racing. You know how we always love to root for the purple and black around here. Also, Therapeutic Horses of Saratoga. That's where Kim Weir is working now and doing great work, helping humans and helping horses on an even bigger scale than before. To learn more about the work she's doing and to give generously to that cause, check out inthemoneypodcast.com/horses. We encourage you again, check out our YouTube channel. Do us a favor, subscribe over there. Check out all the YouTube exclusive content that we have. And if you want to keep track of everything we've got going on at In the Money Media, subscribe to our free newsletter. That helps us out too. InTheMoneyPodcast.com/email. This show's been a production of In the Money Media. I'm Peter Thomas Fornatel. May you win all your photos.